On this week's show, are you missing out on early risk mitigation? With Sheer Abacasis from Firmus. In this week's news, is concrete the key to carbon goals in construction? And more.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
All right. I'm back in the home studio. Lots of days on the road, all over the place, but landing back here in beautiful Colorado with my boy Nathan Wood. How you doing, Nathan?
We missed you. It's hot. Is it hot up there?
Not quite. It's starting to creep, but you know, I'm 27 years, no air conditioning, doing my ESG up here. So, and we're still surviving.
Well, I shouldn't say that hot, because I mean, we're barely peaking 100, I think, a couple of days. So, you know, Texans down there are saying, well, hot, that's not hot.
And it lacks a bit of humidity. So, It's a very different field. Although for the last 30 days, I will say it has felt like I was swimming everywhere I went. And I'm like, what is this humidity thing? So, well, we have a wonderful guest. Sheer, how are you this morning?
I'm very well. Thank you.
Thanks for sitting down. Where you got a nice orange hard hat in the back there.
No,
where
are you coming? That's perfect.
Yep, there it is. Where are you coming to us from this morning?
So I'm here in Florida, in Miami. I thought I'm coming for the summer, but it's actually raining every single day.
Welcome to Florida. You never know.
Yep. You never know.
That is true. Well, we are going to have a whole lot of fun, and let's get right on into it. Sheer, tell us a little bit about your history before we get into what you're up to now, which I think is fantastic. Tell us a little bit about your history. How'd you get here?
I was born and raised in Israel. This is why I have this difficult name to pronounce. But we just said that we will call me Sheer, like a sheer wall for all the construction mm-hmm. people in the room, and we'll all be fine. Since a very young age, I was very passionate about data. Actually, my dream was to become a police investigator. That's what I wanted to do. And I liked the combination between data science and technology. And when I joined the Israeli military, I joined naturally the intelligence forces. Specifically in the intelligence forces, I joined a cyber security unit. I was there for almost 7 years, and that's where I got my background in technology, cyber, and data science. After that, I managed some technological operations for a private business intelligence firm in London. And when I came back to Israel about 5 years ago, I started this startup, Firmus, in construction, and the idea was to be able to bring data as a risk mitigation tool for pre-construction and construction as a whole.
Well, so that's a big jump to get to construction from cybersecurity, data analysis, and Israeli intelligence. So what drew you into construction in the first place?
It is a very big jump. And the connection with everything you mentioned is data. Data is the key. And what brought me to construction is I wanted to open a business in cybersecurity, actually. And I had this amazing idea in cybersecurity. And then I went to an accelerator, which helps you to build your company. And then what they told us there that stuck with me is a lot of people that are coming from the technology to the problem are finding a difficulty with delivering something that the market doesn't really need. So what they teach you there is you need to come from the problem. You need to find a problem that you can really identify with and then build the technology around it. And maybe you even find a manual solution to that. It doesn't have to be a technology. It doesn't have to be AI. It needs to be a problem that you really want to solve. So I researched different industries, including construction. And the story, which I always tell, is I came to this construction site and I saw 10 people or even more standing next to a door that can't be opened because it clashes with electricity panel. And they are all arguing, first, who's the fault? And second, what do we do next? Do we move the electricity that way? How much it's going to cost us? Do we move the closet this way? How much it's going to cost us? And then it was a massive problem on site. And as a data person, the first thing I asked is, can I see the drawings? Can I see what the what the construction documents say? And I saw that this clash was on the drawings from the get-go. This is a problem that we could anticipate if we were analyzing the data properly before going out to the field.
And that led to where you are now. So tell us a little bit about what you have built at Firmus before Nathan, why don't you dive in? It looked like you had a question there before I jump in.
Maybe we do need an explanation because I've been looking at the website and digging in. So I already know more about what Firmus does. And I sort of love coming into these conversations blind, but I already know exactly what you're doing. But I think, yeah, for our listeners, if you want to describe a little bit of what you're trying to do, and then I'll ask some really nerdy questions because I'm definitely familiar with what you're doing.
Perfect. Firmus is providing AI solution for pre-construction that allows pre-construction managers and VP of pre-construction to simply upload their documents, their full construction document set, before they bid on the job, before they go out to the field, and automatically find discrepancies and design errors that if you don't catch early on, you risk having the wrong estimation, you risk having rework and delays on site, and you risk losing the trust with your client, with your owner. So the idea is to be able to read the documents properly and find all those unknown unknowns as soon as possible.
So in the earliest phases, to call out the problems that you saw before we fight about it on site, we know about it ahead of time and we can kind of organize it in the office. But instead of saying, hey, we need a better process with this, you know, for the people, we're gonna let the computer do some of this for us. What made you think that was even possible at the time?
Okay, I'll answer this question first. So I came from this unit where everything is possible. That's the mentality that they are teaching you there. They are teaching you to think in a way of everything is doable. Maybe it's going to take me a lot of time. Maybe it's going to be complicated. Maybe it will require a lot of layers of solutions. But at the end, if you're creative enough and if you're passionate enough, you'll do it. You'll make that happen. So I think I came with this perspective to this problem that we're solving. The reason that AI is so important here and not necessarily just changing the processes, as you said, but also adding AI to it. And you know, Jeff, you know pre-construction quite well with Join. So you probably know what I'm talking about, but I felt when I stepped into this industry that pre-construction are not getting enough credit. They're not getting the pre-construction managers are not getting the credit that they deserve to get. And the first time I felt that was when a pre-construction manager told me, when the construction on site goes perfectly with no issues, no one comes back to say, thank you, pre-construction, for saving all those potential errors from happening. But when something wrong happens on the field, they know to go back to pre-construction and tell them, how did you miss that? So that was something that that showed me how pre-construction is not getting enough credit. And what AI is doing, it allows pre-construction managers to do 10x more than what they can do with the resources that they have. And it makes pre-construction something that can no longer be ignored as a very important stage, or the most important stage, to be honest, in my opinion, at least, in construction.
I love what you're doing here. I get asked all the time by folks in the industry, like, who is doing AI for drawing review? Because doing AI for specifications or contract review, things like that, where it's all text, is one thing. Dealing with vectors and rooms and spatial things, like, I'm just, my head spinning about like the rule sets and like all of these. And again, I know there's some IP and stuff going on, but I guess like, if I'm an estimator, help me understand, like, how am I using this tool? Is it just, I give it the drawings and it does everything for me and finds it? Or do I have to like create the rules of like what I want it to find? Yeah. Like how interactive is that with the estimator?
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the ConTech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@theconTechCrew.com to learn more.
So it's exactly as you described it in the drag and drop or input-output environment. You just upload your drawings and automatically receive this dashboard that tells you what are the issues on your project. And I think that that's what separates AI solutions from traditional software solutions, that with AI, you can have this behavior of just like input, output. I upload my drawings, I get this report, as opposed to doing a lot of this work by yourself.
Do they know what it's looking for? Like, is there any visibility into like what's being looked for, what's not being looked for? Just because I think there's that, always that trust issue, right? Of like, if I'm fully going to rely on this, then I need to know it's going to be better than me, right? And I know that that's, if, anytime I talk to an estimator, that's always their concern. I'm sure you get it all the time. How do you respond to that?
No, 100%. Because it's such a input-output behavior, this is something that you need to learn how to trust, because it's not something you can alter or change or adapt. It's like ChatGPT. You ask a question, you get a response. So you need to learn to trust it, and that's a process, Nathan. It actually, what we do in Firmus is every construction company was starting to working with us. They are first trying it on 4 projects. So they're trying it 4 times. They usually do it in parallel to their manual review. They see what are the differences. And then once they are convinced they can trust it, they move to an annual agreement. We just released the case study with Nibi Brothers. They are with us for a long time, since the beginning. And now we reach a point that they trust it more than a person reviewing it. When it says that it does something, it's covering 99%, right? It's covering everything. And another point that you raised there about the fact that identifying geometry is more complicated these days than text, because text is something that is now being very developed with ChatGPT, OpenAI, all of that. Identifying object is still very complicated. Identifying a toilet within a context of a drawing is still very complicated. And yeah, and that's why we always have a set of checks that we do. And every time we add a check, we deliver that to the customer. They know exactly what is covered in Firmus and what are the checks that we're still working on.
And that's really interesting. Yeah, we've seen that a ton, especially in pre-construction. I think it's why the space has been a little bit slow to adopt. Difference between what Join did and what some of the other things like you're doing and the estimating software and platforms are doing is, you know, there's a lot of counting and whatnot. Join was more about, you know, elevating the pre-construction team to get them out of the weeds and into the project themselves. on a very particular set of collaborative projects, you know, in a delivery model that's really collaborative and everybody's at the table, much larger. So these are great because I think it'll fit a lot of different sizes. It doesn't really matter the contractual model, right? You've got to do this before you go out anywhere. Yeah. And you're absolutely right. We only get credit when we're wrong. We never get credit when we're right. And that's, I mean, that's, it's also part of growing a career path, right? Like so many people, we talk about this a lot. I've been doing a webinar series on it, is like, you've got to invest in your construction technology for your pre-construction team to elevate because the job's changing, right? We don't need, you know, counters anymore. We need thinkers. Mm-hmm. We need problem solvers because exactly. We have so many problems that are outside of this door is not where it's supposed to be and the electrical's back there. It's like, well, my switch box is going to take 52 weeks to get here. Like, I got to get to that ahead of the other things I'm doing, or I'm bleeding money on schedule or materials or expense management. Like there's so many places to go spend your time. Exactly. That it's great to see this. I'm wondering, as you've built, what's that process been like as you're building new features, as you're building this in and you're getting your clients to that, you know, into the rhythm, what's the sort of the reaction been, and what do you think they're doing now with their time? Like, are you, you know, they get this whole, oh, is it replacing my job?
So that's exactly as you described it. Now they have more time to do the meaningful part of the job. The stuff that they studied so long to be able to do, right? Like engineers that are going out of university and starting to work for a construction company, they want to use their knowledge. They want to work on finding resolutions. They want to work on collaborating with the team. They want to work on the decision making part of the job. Now to find people that will be willing to sit down and compare between sheets and making sure that the tag here on the door is the same one on the tag in this other page, it just doesn't make sense for them anymore. So, and I think that's another benefit for AI, that it's a jump starter. It gives you this first review that you can then take and upgrade and bring it to the next level. Add the constructability piece. Add the more sophisticated checks to it.
Yeah, and so I guess not to get too technical, but you know, in my old days in reviewing a lot of PDFs and stuff like that, we would encounter a lot of, you know, some PDFs were really easy to, you know, get TrueType type font and vectors and all this stuff, and others would, you know, come in as, you know, basically like scanned documents, and it was just like complete garbage. Like, are you guys still facing some of that? And like, how are you dealing with it? Because yeah, like that's not your software's fault, but yet you still have to deal with it, right? How are you guys dealing with that?
Yeah. You talked about IP a little bit, so I wouldn't get too much into the details, but I wish we could count on vectors, as you said. The problem is we really can't. We look on those drawings like images. It's like we got a 2D image, and now we need to train an AI model to look at this image and identify the elements within it and read the text in it, because we are getting scanned documents. Still.
And when you have overlaying symbols, then it becomes extremely hard, for you to be accurate.
A lot of noise. We are also getting drawings that have like people write on it. Like, it's not even digital. People just write their comments on it. And the system needs to be able to read it, because we tried to provide a solution that doesn't require anyone to change. And we're doing it, but it's a challenge.
Yeah, it's like creating frictionless transformation is like, it's almost like an oxymoron, right? Because it's like you want them to stay where they are, but yet you want them to change what they're doing. And it's, you get pulled in both directions for sure. Yeah, I feel you.
For our investors, Navitas Capital, they coined it quite well. They call it the leapfrog effect, where instead of gradually what AI is providing them, instead of gradually developing to a certain point, it just jumps over a lot of technologies and a lot of things that need to happen, because it covers up for a lot of the a lot of those mistakes or the things that we can use AI to deal with.
That's such a phenomenon right now too, because I think it's going to separate certain groups from one another, because that leapfrog is can be awesome but unsettling, right? You're going, you're skipping the it's like going from, you know, having to train yourself and work out to become a good bike rider, and all of a sudden being a Tour de France level bike rider, but you never ridden, you know, you never raced, you've never been a part of, you didn't go through the stages of that. So I'm wondering if you're seeing any of those. I mean, it looks like, you know, most of your clients probably are sort of on the cusp of that digital transformation anyway, but I'm interested as you predict. So you got to have a few that are going to land a little bit awkwardly on their feet after a change like that.
So I'll tell you that that was a comment that we received a lot at the beginning. Construction companies told us, we actually want people to do this manually because that's how they learn. That's how.
So I was going to bring that up. Yep.
That totally. Was a comment that we received a lot of the times. And that's why we decided to keep the data. So the decision making is still belongs to the pre-construction manager. They can see the issues. They can decide what to do with those issues. And all the data is available to them. Instead of, you know, digesting everything and giving them only the bottom lines, what we decided to do is to provide the bottom lines together with the data and allow them to go over the data and get their decisions themselves. And that's how we mitigated this concern of not being able to learn from this experience.
Have you gone so far as to allow them to add new manual ones that then start now training the model? Like if it did miss something and they found something, can they add it themselves and then it actually like learns from it?
So it's something that we want to add in the future. Currently, what they will do is they will take a Firmus report. Mm-hmm. They will download everything that they got from Firmus. And a lot of the times they continue their own scan on top of Firmus. They might be using Bluebeam to do that. So they will upload the drawings to Bluebeam and add their own comments to that.
Interesting. Yeah, I can see that workflow in my head right now. That makes a lot of sense.
Everyone supports a culture of well-being in the field and is equipped with the tools to help prevent suicide in construction. Procore Safety Qualified courses were built in partnership with our customers, elevating enhancements to their standard OSHA training. And the Bringing the Right Mindset series equips individuals and leaders alike with the skills necessary to really build resilient teams. We've made these three courses available for free and on demand, and they're offered both in English as well as Spanish, and they are CEU certifiable. Procore.com/certified-qualified is where we host our Procore's learning portal, and anyone can use their Procore credentials or create a free account to get started.
So you got here. Where's next? So it looks like even in the you know, with the NIMBY case study, there's a lot of that is about, you know, partnering with your clients. Where do you see this? I mean, obviously you're going to tighten up what it can detect and what it can work with, and you know, you kind of mentioned toilets earlier, some things are hard that you're probably, you know, not focused on now, but outside of that, like, where do you see this headed?
So the underlying technology for all of this is the ability to take data out of a construction document to a structured database. Once you have that, so just imagine this. I take all this 2D graphics, I take it out, and let's imagine I'm putting all this data in Excel that tells me, you have in this room, you have this door, the fire rating rate is this. You have all the information in Excel, right? When you have all the information in Excel, that's when you can run any question that you want. So today we're starting with what we call bidability, which are the questions about, is the information there and is it consistent? Everything that helps you to make sure your estimation is accurate. From there, we're growing to buildability, which is not only is the information there and is it consistent, but is it can we build this way? Is it true? Is it doable? And from that, we can grow to resolutions, and we can add more and more sophistication to the checks that we're doing. And eventually, the vision behind all of that is to become the first and top risk mitigation tool for construction. Because when we think about it, what are the tools that we have today in construction that for risk mitigation? We can use contingencies. So that's what construction companies are doing today. They're using the contingency to cover up for any potential cost of runs, delays. We can choose the right contract that we want to have with the owner. Is it going to be a GMP? Is it going to be a design build? And that affects the level of risk that I'm taking on myself. And we have insurance. But the best risk mitigation tool is using data in the beginning of the project, is being able to analyze data and being able to turn unknowns to known unknowns and then to known knowns. And this is, I think, this is the new game of risk mitigation. That's what we're trying to do here.
But that's exactly well said. That's where we need to go, because risk costs time, rework costs time. All of that is, you know, sort of how you build on the data. You're not thinking about exporting it into Excel. You're actually thinking about getting it structured and using it in the background to inform what's going on as you move through the project cycle before we get to the field. Nathan?
Well, and I think that workflow you just described was perfect. Just the same way I would use a ChatGPT to dump something in and have it spit something out, but I know I'm not just going to take what it, you know, gave to me. I know there's going to be mistakes in it. So I'm going to go in and I'm going to tweak it up, but it's going to be way faster than if I had created that from scratch.
Exactly.
And same thing of, yes, I'm going to throw this into Firmus. I'm going to, you know, get something back, but I'm going to review it. I'm going to see what it did. I'm going to, you know, verify that it's right and see what other things maybe it missed, and whether that's Bluebeam, whether it's what other tool, the more we can, again, make that a frictionless kind of pick your tool that you're going to use for the analysis and manual part, and bring those in the same way we would from a ChatGPT into a Word or anything else. So I think, yeah, the more we're looking at the user workflows, really thinking about how they do things today, but how to get them into comfortably using the tools of tomorrow. I mean, yeah, you're spot on. It's awesome.
Yeah. And a lot of those questions would run automatically. But the ability to have, you said, right, Jeff, that it's not really an Excel. It's just like the way of thinking about how a structured data is opposed to a 2D image. When you have data that is structured, you can ask any question that you want. Is this door, what's the fire rating of this door? Does it sit within a wall with the same fire rating or not? Like, all of those complex questions become a matter of natural language question that becomes an answer right away.
Well, yeah, you hit on a good one there, because there is in part of risk mitigation is code compliance and working on any type of discrepancy or anything going on to make sure it's actually not just buildable, but buildable by code. Do you see any of that compliance coming into play over time?
Yes, that will happen more into the future after we master the bidability and buildability parts that I mentioned. The reason for that is the code compliance is changing between different states. So it's harder to track. This is something that we will cover later on.
It's almost an opportunity. Now, this is a harder one, and it's looking down the road, because one of the big problems we see right now in construction, I wouldn't call it a problem, but one of the friction points is, you know, a lot of point solutions, right? So, you know, you have a single problem, And like, I could see with you guys in that respect, you could build compliance in, or could you consume somebody else's? Because that we are seeing a ton of the large language model, you know, AI teams out there consuming the code and trying to really sort it all out. And then, you know, they can present it to you so you don't have to figure it out yourself. You're like, you're in Ohio. It, you know, we pull that in from over here. It goes across, and now we can, you know, we can cross check it.
Exactly. Exactly. Once all the data is structured, as you said, it's just like we can take this code. It becomes a natural language questions to feed into the engine and run in real time.
It's sort of amazing, Nathan, over the years, how some of our other guests have come together and been like, oh, you're working on this, you're working on this. Okay, I'm starting to see how this, and especially with the advances in what we're doing, how that connection can be made.
Yeah, I think when this concept that you're doing now first came up, or I first saw it in the Bay Area and outside San Francisco, was they didn't call it AI at the time. I think it was computer vision for submittal review was kind of the best way of describing what it was. And it wasn't as much, again, for upstream bidding. It was more for downstream submittals, which is probably less of a value prop than where you're going. So I think it's always interesting to see the iterations and that, you know, these innovations never go away. They just build momentum and technologies change and environments change. And so it's cool to see what you're doing. And yeah, hope the best for it.
Thanks, Nathan. And I see what you say. I will say that a lot of traditional technologies are still available today for this, like computer vision and image processing, all of those. Those are still in use. Those are
part of it. It's part of what you're doing, right? It's exactly. It's just one component of the larger AI model
exactly.
now.
Exactly.
Back in 2020, I heard about a new software platform called Join. Within minutes of seeing Join, I knew it had the power to revolutionize collaborative project delivery. In fact, I was so sold on Join that I joined the team as its industry evangelist. Many trade shows and podcasts later, Join is now used by 50% of the ENR top 30. Why? Pre-con and ops leaders at DPR, Bolt, McCarthy, Barton Mallow, Clark, and others say that they like Join because it does two big things: collaborative, trackable decision-making, and awesomely simple visuals. Want to learn more about the power of Join? Go to www.join.build/demo to learn about how better gets built.
It's all built in layers. So you have a layer of image processing, and you have a layer of computer vision, and you have a layer of AI, and everything comes together to build this solution.
Yeah, and drawing that line between where is your IP and where is, like, if the user doesn't fully understand what they're doing, then how can they really control it, right? It's like, yeah, it's like we have to find that line.
Yes. Correct. You need to, and you need your AI to be explainable, right? You need to be able to create output that people can digest and also understand why you made these decisions, why the AI made this decision. And that's also something that traditional technologies like computer vision and image processing allow us to do, because it's more straightforward to the user.
Well, that is awesome. And, you know, it made me think of it. I had to bring it up. We had Kat Gordienko on from Bilty, and that's what Bilty's doing, is working on the code. And so it's an interesting thing where, you know, same thing. She came from outside of the business, saw a problem and dove into it and said, we've got this ability to take this same kind of thing. Like, people just jamming in their own acronyms, et cetera. You know, I'm thinking about how many times a drawing gets printed so that, you know, somebody who has all that experience can then mark it up with a pen and paper and pencil and now, but it's got to fit into our crazy new technology process so that we can keep onboarding people and keep moving faster. So I think it's awesome. I think you're part of one of the, you know, the new revolutions. I've said this for a while with my days at Join. I think at least, you know, it was 3 years ago, almost four now with Join, that, you know, the next 5 years were the transformation for pre-construction. And sometimes it's nice to be right, because, you know, we're seeing lots and lots and lots to fill out what I'd call a tech stack in pre-construction. And it's time for those groups to invest. Like I said, I'm doing a series of webinars with a couple other folks that just are diving into what does this really mean? Because eventually too, if you can get structured data in what you're doing, then you can compare it against structured data of what you're delivering. And now we can see the difference between what we designed and what we built.
The digital twin.
I like this because you're data focused. You know, I've said this forever. It's the data twin, right? It's the decision to use these doors that then had to be changed for something we didn't know, that can come back and say, listen, you know, 50% of the time that you, or 75% of the time that you spec this, you actually end up deciding on this. So why not decide on that faster and be able to sit across from your client and say, listen, I know you want that. And, you know, my Join friends will love this, because I used to use terrazzo flooring all the time, because it was like, everybody wants to use terrazzo flooring. And then you realize the lag time on getting the materials. And oh, by the way, it's really hard to install. So you need particular people to install it for you. And it's really prone on its way in to issues for punch lists. So at the end, you switch to something else. And it's like, so let's just have that on the table ahead of time. Nathan's laughing. He's seen
It reminds me of an Amazon, whenever you buying something and it says like, this thing is very frequently returned. It's like, we need one of those, like, for like, this thing is very often swapped out later in your project, by the way.
I love it.
But yeah, that's what AI is for.
Yeah. And that's why we always ask, the way that we decide what to code next or what are the next check that we need to develop is we're asking the construction companies, show us your RFIs, show us your previous projects, and what are the things that happen more often? And what are the things you're going back to the design team on? What are the most common claims and disputes with owners? You can get so much knowledge from that, and you can prevent so much of those stuff.
Yeah, Nathan, but that involves measuring our mistakes. We don't want to do that. No.
I just have this wild view of Firmus sitting there as you pass drawings from, you know, architect to owner for approval or looking, and then over to GC and over to trades, and it just has to go through the Firmus check before, and it's like, no, you failed. Go back. Checks and balances before it gets anywhere. So, but yeah, you're right. We do have to get much better admitting that we make a lot of mistakes along the way, and just realize that they're probably not mistakes as much as they are. We're always shooting for the moon, and you're just not at this. You know, you can have a project that's, you know, on budget, on time, etc., but you know, it's going to cost you a lot of money. So there's a Venn diagram here somewhere that people have to come down to reality on. So it's awesome to see what you're doing, Shear. Thank you so much for joining us. You're going to stay with us because you know, we're going to get into the construction technology news of the week. Nathan, what do you got for me, buddy?
Oh man, I got a two-parter. We're gonna go deep into some green science here, because you know, we think it's hard enough. We're just talking about construction process transformation. But what's really hard is material transformation. You talk about standards and different stuff. So I found this article on Forbes. It says here, carbon-free cement is now a step closer, because again, when I was coming out of school and got my LEED certification, you know, having fly ash was like just kind of the, okay, sure, you can save a little bit. But I had no idea. I think it says here that concrete production accounts for between 7 and 10% of all global CO2 emissions. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not just in how it gets from the trucks to the site and all those things. That's completely separate. It's just how the cement itself is made. Again, I won't bore you on all the chemistry and mechanics of making that cement, but it's a very highly CO2 producing process. And so it has been interesting, because of all these mandates now with global warming, to get rid of that. And because again, concrete is literally our second most used material in the world behind water, which again goes into making concrete. So we're not going to stop using it, but we have to figure out some way to make that very valuable cement in a way that doesn't create CO2. We talked about fly ash or coal waste is one way that this article found of doing it. I guess it probably was more like 40 or 50% that you could do fly ash when I was studying those things. And it did actually reduce the strength of the concrete. These new research out of Melbourne, Australia is now able to put 80% of the cement replaced with this coal-fired, again, it's a byproduct of coal-fired power plants. So it is, again, more of that circular economy. So there's one way. Another way that I will not try and explain because it's very, very complicated, but this electric cement is basically taking, again, how many times are we demoing and tearing down buildings, taking that leftover concrete and just putting in the landfill? You can actually crumble it up, take the aggregate out, separate it, and repurpose. I believe they call it Kagli. I'm going to botch my names here. All the civil engineers are going to make fun of me for not knowing these words. But at any rate, a way of basically doing this again and recreating cement. But they are not quite there as far as getting that process certified. Because again, this is what makes this stuff so hard in the material science world is that we have standards and we have ASTM and all of these different requirements. And so one of the companies that is kind of what led me to all this and getting into my second article here is
really hey, you can't roll into the second.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh man, but it's a two-parter. Okay, I'll stop here. Okay,
let's it's a two-parter. About, you gotta stop these here. Two. You gotta okay, stop all right, here.
What do you got? Jump in, Jeff.
Well, here's my thing: is that it's funny because you know this has been since I got involved in the industry. This has been at the crux of a lot of folks really you know forward thinking. I always think of Mark Reynolds. From Mace Group in United Kingdom. He's immediately his first rule was, you know, cut 25% of the concrete out of any structure that they're trying to build. That was his way. But I started to realize, I always thought, oh yeah, this is the greatest way to do that. But it's such a ubiquitous and usable material that yeah, a group like Mace can get creative and think through that and remove it. But that takes time and money and experience, and that's really, really hard. So we've been talking for years. And so to see this become a circular economy, I mean, Nathan, all I can think of is you and I go fly out of DIA. Where I park at DIA, I go past the area where they pull all that out because they're doing all the demo now. And they've, you know, redone. Mm-hmm. There's just stacks of it. It's all cracked up and it's piled up. And I'm just sitting there thinking, what? And I had my kids with me when I was flying this last time. And they're like, what are they going to do with all that? And I'm like, probably dig a big hole and leave it. So just imagine that those are everywhere. You know, just like with wood, that if we can find a way that every truck that delivers a new round can take an old round back and drop it off and get it, you know, reprocessed.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I went stir crazy trying to, you know, create circular economy examples in my house edition project and usually to my own detriment.
Yeah.
Because there is a reason why we do it the way that we do it in most cases.
Yeah.
But it is cool. I think, yeah, you do need sort of this venture capital or these kind of side projects or university funded projects to really see these and, Sure. I don't want to stop if you have anything to add before I get excited about my next one. So I know I saw you nodding at somebody. So it sounds like you got some experience with concrete. You're nodding at my explanations at least.
A lot of experience with rework and wasting concrete. That I have experience with.
There's nothing worse than seeing guys chipping out concrete in the middle of a project. It's just it just breaks your heart, right?
Yeah. It's one thing to move a door. It's another one to have missed and had a pour and have to go back and chip it out to add something in. It's dangerous. It's dirty. It takes forever.
Yeah. Usually just try and figure out a design around it. And then here we go again. So
here we go again.
And back to drawing iterations and all the need for firmness and everything else. But
and change orders. All right. What do you got next? Right, I know you're so dying next one to jump in.
I know. Because I do think I was the reason I got interested in all this concrete and cement innovation, it was a how I built this podcast about this company, Brimstone, and did some research. I found that they were ranked number 5 in this Times America's top green tech companies of 2024. And what they've really done this year that's unique is making a truly Portland cement. So it is actually from a chemical ASTM, certified process, the exact same thing as Portland cement. So that's very different from your fly ash examples or some of these other examples that are basically modifying it, but still passing. This actually is truly chemically Portland cement, but not made from the same process of limestone. It basically takes a different silica rock and is able to do it without any or very, very, very little CO2 creation. So, but it was very interesting just to listen to that podcast and to hear, again, those that are outside more talking about the business side. And sure, I know you're dealing with this a lot as well as entrepreneurs in this industry, to both have an idea, have to make it work, but then also have to make the business model work for it. Mm-hmm. And the relationship that they were having with the big cement companies that obviously know there's this looming requirement for them to change over from the way they've always done it, and they're going to have to do it one day, but they don't necessarily have the funds or that kind of investment model and that relationship. So, you know, their CEO's answer was essentially that, you know, they're talking very closely with them and they want to build that relationship, but until they have the IP and they've already patented what they're doing, but until they can prove that it's cost competitive at scale, then they want to license it out and have everybody use it. Like that's their model. But it just goes back to this, you know, as if it wasn't complicated enough, you got to add money in there too, to just make these innovations tough. So, you know, if we think we have it tough, you know, certainly the material science innovation people and those entrepreneurs, they've got it tough. But Brimstone is a cool company. I'm excited to see, you know, where they go in the next couple of years with being able to fully replace it. And again, most of us, we won't even know. Like, we'll still be buying from the same companies. It's still going to come out the same. We'll have no idea that we reduce 7 to 10% of our global carbon emissions. But until we can figure out all these backend mechanics of the costs and the ASTM requirements, it's a cool story to watch and see what we can learn from it. I mean, I don't know, Jeff, what do you think software, you know, construction software companies can learn from this type of a story?
Well, it's going to be too, you have to be ready to measure. So anybody sitting in Shear's seat, anybody sitting on the data twin, digital twin side of things, has to realize that you're going to have to measure this, right? Because this is something, again, I'm going to bring Mark Reynolds to the fold again, because I saw this great talk by him at one point where he predicted well before we started talking about it on a regular basis that the buildings that we build are going to be judged and valued quite differently. So yes, you and I won't know that as we walk into that building, that it was made differently and that the concrete was a different mixture that's, you know, reduced global carbon emissions. But I'm going to know that that is one of the more valuable buildings and that I'll be living in and purchasing. You know, if I'm going to move my office there, I know I'm moving my office to a green space that's going to fit with my company's culture, right? And so we're going to see, you're going to look and you're going to see 4 buildings next to each other. And they're going to look very similar, right? Because this isn't going to look any different. Lots of these materials are, you know, like Shear said, you're not going to know if I did clash and issue detection with Firmus or by hand for, you know, 6 weeks. I'm going to be sitting with the data across from you, or at least a list of something to talk to you about. But one person's going to be at the table faster, or it, you know, those 4 buildings, you're going to go, why is the one in the middle holding its value and growing its value and almost full, and some of the others are, you know, having to run rebates, et cetera, to get people in there. Now you're going to know why.
So here's a question that just came in my head. So the same way that in schools, they're like testing if you use ChatGPT to write your report. It's like, what if we got the same thing? It's like, oh, you just used Firmus and you didn't actually review it. Like, you only just let it go. So like, we can tell that you did that versus you did it and you looked over it, right? And like, we can actually like check for those that are trying to cheat the system. Because it isn't a replacement. It's an augmented tool. It's something that just like anyone explains what AI should be and how it should be used. It should be used by responsible, competent people that know how to take in what it gives you and say what's good, what's not, what's missing. Yeah. So yeah, we can't hammer that home enough for the people like, oh, AI is going to take over everything. So hold on a second.
Yeah, not everyone can read Fermi's report as opposed to ChatGPT.
No.
Yeah. So, hey, Nathan, that's great. I love circular economy. I love it when you bring two linking articles. I am going to go, and I think this fits, you know, when I knew Shear was coming on and what she was doing, and I know what you're into, Nathan. I've been talking to Chris Ovens quite a bit from Aido, and he wrote this article about construction technology. Imagine it just worked. Seriously. And what's interesting is Chris and his company have gone through quite a few iterations of what they do and how they do it. And basically what they stumbled upon was, you know, they're really good at data and collecting data and organizing data and analyzing data for organizations across disparate systems, which is, you know, one of the biggest problems. But what they really realized in this process was they weren't data people. They were business process improvement people through data analytics and analysis of good data and teaching companies how to go through the process. This is one of the things that, you know, we've got groups like Fermis and others out there that are creating valuable data that are cruising through steps, I would say. I don't want to call it jumping because you're cruising through steps faster using machines to do what they're great at, but it's creating data. What do I do that with that in my business? How do I then cross-reference that to things like time cards, material tracking, expense tracking, you know, change orders, RFIs, all these things that I'm creating in places? How do I connect all of it? And they stumbled on the fact that they're really, really good at it. And Chris and the team have created a process for it. And he started, you know, putting out some really good guidance. So he's got these seven steps. I love a good seven stepper. You know, it works. I like, you know, prefer 5-minute abs instead of 7-minute abs, but all right, Chris, we'll go with seven. To be great, you just need to be good repeatedly. There is this whole idea that I have to get it perfect. And what do we say all the time? Perfect is the enemy of progress. It just doesn't happen. But I love the quotes he's using in here. Don't wait to strike till the iron's hot, but make it hot by striking. I thought that was interesting. Nathan, you'll love this. To win, you have to keep score. You know, if you don't measure it, you can't manage it. It's just the way it is. And so just easy there to go there. The right team to build the dream. I love this because he never uses data-driven. Because data-driven doesn't work. It's data-informed. It's data-powered. It's data-enhanced. You're still the expert. You know, we're still the construction experts. We still know what we're doing. We know what we want, right? The technology never knows what an owner cares about for their project. Only we know that. Only the team knows that. But also the team has to know the business. It has to know what it's doing. And it has to be focused on getting it done. Business improvements aren't accidental, right? You got to have a map. The alchemy of harnessing construction data is, you know, what if you could turn $1 into $3? There are so many ways to increase your bottom line, but you won't know that unless you can manage and look at your data. And it's just the way it is. And, you know, this is just good sage advice. Any problem is an opportunity. Your problems are your opportunities. If you didn't have problems, your business would be where it is and it's never going to grow. And that's actually not quite fun. You know, we're always problem solving and looking for new things. And harnessing construction data requires leadership, a trailblazer, somebody to really be in charge of it. So, you know, Shear knows this over her years. You did work as the person in charge of the data. If no one's in charge of it, then nothing's getting done with it. So I thought this was really fun because Chris created sort of a process to expose the fact that by connecting disparate data systems, you can create an ecosystem that can be the foundation of your business process improvement.
Yeah, it's like he was listening to our conversation. I think he hit on all the points here.
Well, I will say Chris is a good listener and has a great team. So some of this, by the way, is, you know, what they learned as through their own process as an organization. So it's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Shear, any thoughts on, you know, you're a data nerd.
You got me.
Any thoughts on, you know, just leveraging this and people looking at coming along and behind the systems that you and other fantastic founders are creating?
For us, and I think Nathan, we talked about it, this drag and drop behavior is very important in construction. They don't have time, really. They don't have time. They're very busy. Projects are very complicated. They have a lot of software to vet. And that's another thing that is due to this awakening that pre-construction is the next big thing. There's a lot of software to vet as well. And they really don't have time to invest in that. So what we kept it is the simplest way possible. Upload your drawings, get the report. The report looks exactly the same way you used to see reports that are done by humans. And that's the way to keep it simple.
And I think, unfortunately, a lot of our decision makers don't understand that there is a big difference between a join and a firmus, right? They're not mutually exclusive. You can have and need both, even where there may be small overlaps in certain reporting or other things. And yeah, that can be a tough thing to explain and understand in this world where, yeah, people are always looking for opportunities to cut budgets. But really, it's like, if we're thinking that, you know, $1 to $3, you know, kind of digital multiplier mentality, mm-hmm. You know, you can justify a lot of these softwares, mm-hmm. but you have to, again, change your mindset.
Yeah, change your mindset and analyze, you know, and, yeah. you know, that's to your point, Nathan, when you look at a firmus or a join, a firmus is going to tell you what you need to know and give you your report. A join is going to let you, you know, prioritize it in the fashion that it needs to be, decisions need to be made, right? Because we're blending pre-construction into construction, right? We're trying to move faster, just enough, just in time delivery. And so we have to make those decisions at just enough, you know, at the right time. But the right time varies, you know, and that's what a system like Join will let you do is, you know, hey, we got to get the electrical decided on because I've got to order the switchgear because mm-hmm. I have such a lead time. And then, you know, maybe these other materials, I don't have as much of a lead time. I have a little bit more time. And by the way, the drawing set's not where I need it to be yet. So,
yeah,
you know, as firmus gets new drawing sets, it's going to update the problems. And so a problem today, because it's gray, well, I don't need to worry about that right now because it's mm-hmm. not being affected. So there is this stacking, right? And, you know, firmus isn't applying what they're doing to estimating and to, you know, cost modeling, et cetera. So, you know, you've got others out there that are doing things like that, that are going to help out. Mm-hmm. So it's a stack, right? And that's why I say pre-construction can learn from what Chris is talking about, taking an overarching view and understanding what the stack's going to look like. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also, by the way, having empathy, because Nathan, if I have three softwares that overlap, that have overlapping boundaries, I can't be forced to, unless they are connected, to do it in all three of them. Mm-hmm. Then I've just created triple the work, which, by the way, I see everywhere. I cannot tell you enough.
We've gotten numb to it.
If you manage people, then you are a technology manager, because every one of your people uses the technology that you bring or that the company uses. And so you must understand what their days look like. Because at the end of the day, you're going to think you've helped them and you've really just created a whole new web of work to do that's not valuable. So to Chris's point, you know, think that through. Mm-hmm. And I got one that I just, you know, I'm always looking out into the world for other things. And, you know, Nathan, you're pretty familiar with Kurt. Mm-hmm. I saw Corning shares pop 12% as AI boom drives stronger than expected demand for equipment. I thought this was interesting as you're thinking about a circular economy and as we're thinking about the boom in AI as to what it does for construction and what it can do. You have to also think about the demand that's now placing on the infrastructures that we have today. And that's going to help other builders grow. You know, we see Corning over and over as one of the largest builders as out there. You know, you might know them. They got their well known for the Gorilla Glass on your Apple iPhone. basically made the iPhone possible, because without it, it would, you know, we'd all break them right away. We can still break them, but it's a lot harder to break them than it used to be. And thanks to them for that. But now, they've invented new fiber, new cables, new connectors, new custom integrated optical solutions, because they're reducing costs, reducing the carbon footprint themselves, but there's such a demand for what they're producing. Mm-hmm. And they think, watching what's happening with companies like, you know, Firmus and a million others in every other vertical for this AI need. So yeah. It's kind of interesting to see how this economy is. There was this worry that it was going to take jobs and lower. Nope. We're seeing it put new strains on things and push, a growing economy in a way we need it to.
Well, and innovative manufacturers like that are so interesting because, just from a construction standpoint, because in talking with them, their challenge is that many times they're swapping out equipment within existing buildings. So it's essentially like a retro, it's like you're moving in and out, but you're not just moving furniture. You're moving some big pieces of equipment, big heavy stuff. So they got to laser scan everything. They got to, you know, and have a plan for how they're going to break it apart and get it out of the building. Do they need to cut a hole? Do they not need to cut a hole? There's all this kind of planning that goes on. So they're a really fun one to watch as far as like just a unique builder. Obviously it shows that their demand for keeping up with competition and their use of AI. Yeah. It's no surprise that they're crushing it.
Yeah. I'd be interested to see how they actually apply the AI to that process over time as well. Right. Like that's got to be something that they've repeated so many times that it can analyze how to do it and offer up with generative AI new ways to do that kind of stuff. So I'm interested, you know, Shir, you're on the consuming end of this, but, you know, did you know you were pushing companies like this to start to innovate themselves?
The first thing you asked me is, how did you know it's doable? How do you know that you can do it? And that was like the first comment that we got. Construction companies told us, what you're showing is amazing, but good luck with that. Like, it can never happen. It's not going to happen. But now when people see this stuff that can happen, it triggers their curiosity as well. So we're getting offers from the same customers who told us it's not doable. Now they are part of the process. Now they know what technology can do, and they are part of this innovation.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with this, like last year, right when the ChatGPT thing came out, and there was these questions of like, oh, you know, this really isn't going to affect anything. And I'm like, how much of your backlog is data centers? Oh, well, it's a lot. We're building a ton of them. Like, well, what do you think they're doing? Like, oh yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Like there's a leading indicator. Mm-hmm. It's your backlog and how many of these are needing to be built right now, and semiconductor plants, et cetera. This is all being driven by the technology revolution. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's kind of like, you're answering your own question. So that's, you know, hey, we could go on forever, but I really, this has been a fun one. It's great to be back home. It's great to be back on the show from my little home studio. And Shir, thank you so much for sitting down with us today.
Thank you guys. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, it was fun.
Nathan, it's good to sit down with you. Hopefully I'll see you soon down in that Denver area.
Oh yeah, come on down. We'll let it cool off for you a little bit.
Yeah, let it cool off for me. Although I you know, you got my basement ready now, so my basement VRBO is nice and cool.
That's true.
And thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Shir Abacasis. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to the show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is The Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.